Let's move on to item five, which is our presentation from Makita on capital market assumptions. Good morning.
Morning. We have the power of the clicker now, so we're in charge. This is our annual presentation of our capital market assumptions. Makita, along with other industry consultants and banks, generally on a yearly basis come out with their annual assumptions on what we expect the markets to do. One thing I can tell you is that the assumptions are not always correct. So when we show you a 10-year and a 20-year assumption, it means that's what we build portfolios off of, that's what we expect the markets to do. But markets change, as you heard and you will hear, on a daily basis based on what certain people put out on the internet. The punchline here, and we'll go through every detail and give you some follow-up, but we are not recommending any changes to your asset allocation for the DB plan. Not surprisingly, when things go up on a very rapid pace, the expectations for their future growth go down. So the return expectations have dropped from 2025 to 2026. And with that, I'll turn it over to Colin to go through some of the details of our assumptions and your portfolio.
Oh. Colin, would you pull that microphone a little closer towards you? Yes.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. So as Dave touched on, this is our annual update for capital market assumptions. Those are our long-term projections for expected returns, volatilities, and correlations across asset classes across the globe. Internally, we develop CMAs for about 110 different asset classes. You obviously do not have 110 different asset classes, nor are there really 110 different things in the world, but we do that because different clients slice and dice their portfolio in different ways. Most of what I'll spend time on today is the expected return piece. That's where you're going to see a little bit more changes from year to year compared to volatility and correlation. And we project this over a 10-year horizon and a 20-year horizon. The punchline is almost everything at the start of 2026, we are projecting a lower expected return going forward compared to the beginning of 2025. And as Dave touched on, that shouldn't really be surprising. In 2025, you generate, I believe, a 12.6% return. We had U.S. equity up 18%, non-U.S. equity up 30%+. So when you have a really good period, you are borrowing some return from the future, and that's going to flow through your actual expected return. So the actual process for developing CMAs is, and this is not just a Makita process, pretty much every other consultant or bank or asset manager will stop the clock at a given date, typically going to be December 31, and you look at what the market is telling you. You're looking at what are fixed income yields, what are price to earnings ratios, what are economic growth projections. You're trying to project out for each asset class its main drivers of return on a go-forward basis. So there's really sort of three ways of developing CMAs. The first is just history. Okay, U.S. equity gave us 9 to 10% over the last 100 years. I'm going to project 9% going forward. That's the most basic version. We have very little of historical element in our CMAs. The second way people do it is simply a capital structure. We start with the risk-free rate or cash. We know adding a little bit of duration adds some risk. We know adding some credit risk adds some risk. We know equity is below credit or loans, bonds in the capital structure that should have more risk. So it's a very much a building block approach. There's some of that in ours. But the third category is really where we spend most of the time, and I already somewhat alluded to it. What is the market telling us right now? What are yields? What are price earning ratios, et cetera, and developing it from there. This slide is somewhat of the punchline I already touched on. These are not exactly your asset classes. We put generic asset classes on the header here for a reason. What you can see, no matter pretty much where you are in the world, our returns going forward from here are a little bit lower than they were at the start of 2025. The two areas of green, slightly higher, is real estate, infrastructure, or real assets. That's really the only area across our CMAs where there's a little bit of an increase in expected return. For real estate, it sort of looks like we're at the trough, fundamentals are improving, rents perhaps beginning to increase, pricing are stabilized. And then infrastructure continue to remain very strong on a fundamental basis. But you can just see across the board expected returns down. And I'll walk through a little bit of why that's the case.
I read this again last night, but I'm not sure. Break down real estate a little bit. I mean, are we talking all real estate? Are we talking core? What's the...
So that assumption there is going to be a mixture of core and opportunistic value add, but most of our data is going to come from core. There's the best data there, and then we build value add and opportunistic assumptions on top of that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and the other thing to keep in mind with these numbers is these are net of fees and assume passive management. They do not assume active management. In addition, they're geometric returns instead of arithmetic, and not to get into the math, but geometric assumes risk. You are risk takers in your DB portfolio. You do want to look at geometric returns going forward, not arithmetic, which is a one-year period and has no risk involved.
So just spending a moment on some markets, once again, a big driver of everything is what occurred with yields. So you'll see in the green line, that's where the U.S. yield curve, so from basically cash on the left-hand side to the 30-year bond on the right-hand side, what yields were at the end of 2024. And you see, comparing that to the blue line, the end of 2025, yields are down a little bit. Now, where we sit today, the longer end of the curve's ticked up a little bit. I don't know exactly what it is today. The yields are down today, but let's say 4.3 or so for the 10-year yield and still 4.8, 4.9 for the 30-year yield, something along those lines. So in general, yields are down a little bit compared to the start of 2025. I won't spend too much time on the yield curve slope. Just the main takeaway is longer-term yields are above shorter-term yields, so you have a positive yield curve, a little bit below historical average, but much better than where we were just a few years ago. In credit markets, so the additional yield you get by taking on some credit risk remains at very low levels. Whether you're in high yield or investment grade, you're at very low levels of credit spread. They tick down at the margin throughout 2025. So you started 2025 with high yield spreads at 287 basis points, and they tick down to 266. For investment grade, it went from 80 to 78. Still extremely tight in the credit spread market. This sort of summarizes yields across various categories of the fixed income market. You'll see yield to worst, just one measure of yield for 12/30/2025 in the first numerical column, and then the end of 24 in the right-hand numerical column. Just across the board, yields are lower. So when we look at CMAs, I mean, Dave alluded to this, that it's not a perfect science, but the one area where you have the most accuracy is in fixed income. In general, the yield you're buying in today is roughly what you're going to get over the next 10 years or so. You can mathematically prove that. You can empirically prove that. If I'm buying the aggregate, for example, at 4.32 as of the end of 2025, I have like a 95% confidence I'm going to be within 1% of that, above or below, over the next 10 years. It's mathematically can be proven, historically proven. That's just one of the natures of fixed income, particularly investment-grade fixed income, when you look at it that way. That sort of is summarized on this chart. Yields drive future returns for the fixed income market. Very, very strong relationship in investment grade. High yield, a little bit less so, partially due to defaults in other areas, credit spread changes. But regardless, still, within fixed income, that's the one area you have a high degree of confidence of projections for expected returns. Inflation's interesting because if you look at break-even inflation, that's a difference between what, for example, a nominal 10-year Treasury bond is yielding and a TIPS, a Treasury inflation-protected security is giving you. It's not that volatile of a metric. Even if you look at the 2022-type experience, that basically got to 3% when we were experiencing one-year inflation in the 9-ish percentage for that period. So this doesn't tell you too much. It basically is telling you the market tends to think inflation is almost a short-lived, transitory, typical experience. So right now, we have inflation for the next 10 years projected at 2.3. You just heard in your prior from the prior presenter, it's sitting at 3 or 3 or above. So we projected at 2.3 for the next 10 years. That does assume it's going to, come down. Granted, our CMAs and most everyone's assumptions were before the current debacle in the Middle East right now, but hopefully that is short-lived. There was an announcement, maybe it's coming to the end. I do not know. It changes every single day. But it's really hard to project inflation purely from a market metric. So we use this. We look at survey professional forecasters, other forecasts. We also look at other elements for what inflation should be compared to what's going on in energy prices, commodity prices, et cetera.
To what degree, we're all talking about the current geopolitical climate, and the unsettled nature of the Middle East in particular, to what degree could that actually alter that assumption? That being the conflict, continued conflict, worst case scenarios.
I mean, it's hard to say over a 10-year horizon. If it continues to stay bad, it's going to flow through inflation and then ultimately probably some economic growth across the globe. So exactly how, I don't think anyone knows. I tend to think of, when I look at the last 100 years from, you know, World War II, 39 to 45, Korea War was 50-55, Vietnam 55 to 75. We've been in a conflict a lot for most of this history. So that's some, I don't, not comfort in the sense of I want that to happen, but the markets do tend to ride through those over time. Short-term experiences can drastically vary as you go in and out of these experiences. I'm not aware of anyone who has an accurate projection on how this current issue is going to resolve and its full impact on markets. I think we're all still waiting right now for what is the real impact on the energy market or the energy facilities over in the Middle East, seeing what production actually could look like after this. We know we were generally oversupplied, so there was a little bit of a buffer, but I still don't have and have not seen an accurate depiction of what does this look like for rebuilding some of those facilities over there. So we're still waiting on that, to be honest.
Okay, but it sounds like, if anything, that might manifest itself within the 10-year, but not necessarily affect your 10-year.
Correct. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way to think about this is over a 10-year and certainly a 20-year period, we can digest some of these short-term bumps, and there's a little bit of reversion to the mean. So when Colin gets into it later in the deck, you'll see our 20-year projections are higher than 10 years because we expect the valuations that you're paying a lot, as this page shows, to get exposure to the U.S. equity market. But over a 20-year period, what you pay a lot and you'll lose, you expect to rebound reversion to the mean over the 20-year window.
So this looks at U.S. equity valuations, and we're focusing on what's called the CAPE, or cyclically adjusted price to earnings ratio. So effectively averages out the last 10 years of earnings on an inflation adjusted basis. U.S. equity markets are expensive. They've been expensive for a long time, but we do continue to have very strong corporate earnings here. That's shining through each and every day right now as more and more companies are reporting. So even though U.S. equity produced a 17.9% return last year, or the S&P, so above expectations, it was aligned with the earnings we're actually seeing there. So what's interesting is if you look at our 10-year assumptions for U.S. equity, non-U.S. developed equity, and emerging markets equity, they're all about the same right now. That's the first time in a long time where that's been the case. Normally, valuations were so much cheaper in non-U.S. markets that those are being projected higher. Now they're all about 6.3, 6.2 for the next 10 years. Because U.S. equity proved 17.9 last year, non-U.S. equity markets were up even more, almost double that, 31.2 for EFA. And they don't have the commensurate earnings growth projections to basically reconcile with that and keep that going. So that's sort of the moral of the story with U.S. equity and non-U.S. markets is U.S. markets were good but not as strong, but we have the earnings growth. Non-U.S. markets saw a big price increase, strong return, but they don't have the earnings growth, in our opinion, to sustain that. But regardless, they're starting still at a little bit of a lower valuation. So net-net, basically, we don't think there's any edge right now in a regional difference between U.S., non-U.S. developed, emerging markets. We still wholly recommend a global portfolio because, once again, we can be wrong, anyone can be wrong. We want that diversification. But there is no longer, in our opinion, really a big expected return difference across the globe at this point in time. And you're seeing some of that shine through right now where U.S., I mean, particularly thus far in Q2, is having a great period. EFA a little bit lower than U.S., I believe, but still also a strong year-to-date figure. And then emerging markets, I think, are up about 18% year-to-date. So once again, you're seeing some of that regional dislocations going on, and we can't predict that. We want all of that. But on an average basis, we sort of expect them to average out near roughly the same return over the next 10 years. Same story in emerging markets, up 33.5% last year, but they do not have the earnings growth projections that really would require that to be sustainable, hence why it's about 6.3 for all equity markets across the globe right now. I already talked on the earnings growth picture in the U.S. It remains strong. We're in earnings season. We're seeing that shine through each and every day right now, and that's still sort of the projections. We have that tailwind behind us in the U.S. Despite the high valuation, there still continues to see strong earnings growth and profitability. Private equity, it's hard because of transparency, number of deals, the overarching data there. The main takeaway I would want you to walk away with is private equity pricing still remains elevated. So the price you pay is a big driver of the return you get over time, and private equity pricing still remains elevated, and that's going to be compounded by the challenges and distributions that we're all still experiencing right now in that area. We talked a little about real estate. These are cap rates for effectively core markets, and you're seeing they have ticked up a little bit. They remain at very low levels, but when you look at the fundamentals of the real estate market, income's beginning to improve, pricing stabilized, so it looks like we're roughly at that trough, good to be at that trough, and now bounce back up, or are we going to stay at the trough for a little bit longer? Time will tell, but it does look like there's a lot of stabilization going on in the real estate market right now. I won't get too much into what the market's projecting for rates in the future, but this is one reason why our 20-year assumption is higher than our 10-year assumption, because we look out 10 years and say, what is the market telling us rates are going to be in 10 years? And right now it's saying that the 10-year yield will be about 5.3% in 10 years. So compared to today, where it's around 4.3 or so. More of the story, you look at the big picture, this compares 2026 to 2016 capital market assumptions across just a handful of different asset classes. Generally speaking, returns are, a little bit elevated compared to 2016, largely because of where rates are at, and that's a key driver of a lot of elements of the expected returns. I'm gonna jump through all this data and get to more or less the punchline of the presentation, your actual portfolio. So this looks at a 10-year horizon, contra costa portfolio, and you have in the second numerical column the 2025 CMAs in the blue, and then the third numerical column the 2026 CMAs in that pink color there, and you'll see the difference in the right hand column. If you go all the way to the bottom in 2025, we would have projected your portfolio to generate a 7.5% return over the next 10 years. Now we're projecting that at about a 7. Just to provide some other context, if I look at peers across the United States, most everyone experienced a 40 to 70 basis point decline in their expected return comparing 2025 to 2026. So what you experienced at a 50 basis point decline in projections is right in line with what others are projecting as well. And obviously because, you know, this is a little bit tailored to your actual portfolio, and other clients have a little bit of a different portfolio.
Yeah, and remember that 7% does not include active management. So if your active managers do their job, you can expect anywhere from 30 to 50 basis points as an estimate, an additional return over that 7% for the next 10 years.
And we project 10-year assumptions and 20-year assumptions. The next 10 years for any public DB plan in the United States is critical. So we like to focus on that 10-year horizon. I flip to the next page. It's the 20-year horizon, and you'll see if I go to the bottom row, we're projecting a 20-year expected return of about 8.1%. So that makes everything seem really nice. I would encourage everyone to focus on that 10-year horizon. That's the critical period for every public plan out there in the United States right now, is what goes on in the next 10 years as we get closer and closer to 100% funded. So this figure looks really nice, but if I'm in your shoes, I'm focusing more on that 7%, very solid return, a little bit above the actual rate. So that is sort of where you sit today from our projections. As Dave touched on when he introduced the presentation, we're not recommending any asset allocation changes because of this. This is really to help you get a good estimate on and a good projection where the portfolio is positioned right now for the next 10 to 20 years. So with that, we'll pause and open to any questions on markets or anything you want to talk about.
Any questions or comments? Colin or David. So cruise control, sounds like.
Tempered cruise control, yeah.
Yeah, just to reassure the board, you know, your staff and you as decision makers have done a good job of building an all-weather portfolio. You've built a portfolio that can take some of the good and enjoy some of the, or take some of the bad and enjoy some of the good. Let me rephrase that. So that, yes, if there are market dislocations, such as we're seeing with the current war with Iran, there are chances to rebalance the portfolio. But again, as Colin mentioned, we're not recommending any strategic changes to your allocation or to your targets.
Got it. Any final questions or comments for David and Colin? There are none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.